the new person that's buying your store is buying not just the store, but also your team, especially in our case, because they were so incredible. And so you can't say anything. And I had to sit on it for almost a year, actually for over a year. We did not let the team know until the last 2 weeks.
You're listening to Driving Performance, your go-to podcast for unmatched expertise in the world of buying and selling an automotive dealership. Each episode features discussions with industry leaders and is brought to you by Performance Brokerage Services, North America's premier family-owned automotive dealership brokerage firm with over 30 years of experience. We're here to ensure you gain the most reliable insights to confidently navigate a transaction and accomplish your unique goals. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, we prioritize building lasting relationships and maximizing the value beyond the transaction level. Here's your host, Jamie Farley, for another segment of The Dealer's Journey.
Welcome back to Driving Performance. I'm Jamie Farley, and today's episode is all about the personal side of selling a dealership, what it's really like to let go of something you've built, and what life looks like on the other side. My co-host today is my colleague and partner at Performance Brokerage Services in Canada, Steve Allen. Steve, it's great to host with you.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. I'm really excited about this one. I've known Sue Finneron for a long time, and she's not just a great dealer. She's a great friend and a real force in the industry. She built one of the most successful Hyundai dealerships in Canada, right in Courtenay, BC, which is on Vancouver Island. Her approach to leadership, branding, and the community made her stand out. And then when the time was right, she made the decision to sell. Sue, we're so glad to have you with us today.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
Sue, welcome. We're so happy to have you on the show. I figured let's start at the beginning. What's the story behind your dealership and what did it come to mean to you personally?
So I was a PhD. Papa has a dealership or had a dealership. He had the opportunity to buy his store when I was 10 years old. And I can remember standing over the kitchen table and he had the plans of the store. And I looked at him and I said, I'm going to run that store one day. And I'm sure he patted me on the head and thought, yeah, sure, whatever. I started working at that store when I was 12, typical dealer kid. You're washing cars, you're doing janitorial. As you get older, reception, filing, parts driver, you know, where the hazing really begins with the other team members. I once got sent out for elbow grease. Finally, by the third stop, I realized that they didn't have cans of elbow grease. I was 16. Okay. Anyway, I had the opportunity and where I met Steve to attend the Automotive Business School of Canada in Barrie, Ontario. And we took dealership managing marketing. And that was a great opportunity. Then I went down to Florida and went to Northwood Institute to finish my final year and came back to Canada, started in the finance office as our finance manager left basically as soon as I got back from school. So there really was an empty spot there. Worked my way through finance, did some sales management, new used. Right to the end of the day, I bought all my used cars. I love used cars. So I did that myself. Went to the auction. We had a leasing company. I ran that for a while before we closed it down. Just did a bunch of different things and loved the business.
Sue, you didn't just operate a dealership. You built a local brand. What made your store stand out in the community?
Well, the team, obviously. You know, you don't get to the top without an amazing team of people. And we had just an incredible, dedicated staff. We started out as a General Motors dealership, and we were Pontiac Buick. So you can imagine what happened to us in 2009. Basically, in Canada, if you had two well-performing stores, GM, one Chev, one Pontiac Buick, the Pontiac Buick dealer got shut down. And so fortunately, I'd already been talking to Hyundai about 4 or 5 months before all this came to be, and I had an available store. So within 4 months, we were able to put together a Hyundai deal. Hyundai said at that time, it was the fastest deal they'd ever put together. I was a woman on a mission. I got to keep this team and these people. one of the things that stood out was branding. And we had always worked with caricatures. We put our head on, I even put my head on Wonder Woman's body once and got sued by Warner Brothers, if you can believe it. But we always had a lot of fun with ourselves, and we made our marketing, we tried to be entertaining. And with Hyundai, we created Super Sue, and she has her own persona. But I did all my own radio, and so she was always on the radio. Notice that she. But yeah, Super Sue Finneron was a word. I couldn't cross the street in town without somebody yelling, "Hey, look, it's Super Sue." So right from newsprint to online, we even had a gamification on our website. So you could throw things at Super Sue to win an extra $250 off your car. Just really unique and fun things that we used to brand the store.
At what point did you take over the reins from your dad?
Oh, you know what? He was still there. My dad would still be there today if we didn't own the store. That was his life and his habit. And I thought I was going to be the same way. But really, when the General Motors, I became general manager in 2000, but really when we changed from General Motors to Hyundai, that really affected my dad. And I ran with the Hyundai brand.
Well, it sounds like you got a lot of your own autonomous direction with the Super Sue and the marketing. That had to have been so much fun. What was the reaction in the community with that branding and advertising?
As I said, people just knew you as Super Sue. And even today on the golf course, they call me Super. Not that I'm a super golfer. They just go, "Hey, Super." So it's been short. And my stepkids call me Super, and my partner, he calls me Super. So
it really stuck.
It really did. Even my golf balls say Super Sue.
Friends of mine that work in the industry in Ontario, they still refer to you as Super Sue.
Yeah.
Well, that definitely sounds like you built up quite a brand. At what point did the idea of selling first creep in for you?
You know what? It was really overnight. How old was I? I was about 48, and I was coming home every night. I wasn't happy. I was complaining to my partner nonstop about the day. And that's not easy when you get home from work and somebody is yipping at you all day. And he was lovely and patient. And he said to me, "You know, you don't need to do this anymore." And I was like, "What do you mean? This is my life." I honestly thought I was going to be there well into my 60s. And I went to work a couple days, and a gentleman came up to me one day, and he said, he didn't know who I was. And he said, "Is this place still under the same ownership management?" And I was like, "Well, yes. Why do you ask, sir?" And he said, "Because it just has a different air and a different vibe. And it's just not as welcoming and warm as it used to be." And I was like, "Oh, that's on me," right? That stuff comes from the top. And if you're not having a great experience, how can your team have a great experience every day? And so that was my light bulb moment, I guess you could say. Anyway, a couple of days later, I again was still having not a good time, not enjoying myself anymore. And I just went up to my dad and I said, "That's it. We're done. We're selling it. It's done."
How did he take that news?
He was ready. I don't know. He could have left at any time, but he didn't. You know, he's my dad, I guess, and wants to make sure I'm protected, even though I'm okay. he was great. And he said, "Okay." And yeah, we just started the process.
So it's really genuine of you to own the culture shift that happened at the store level. I mean, I'm fortunate to travel the country and get in stores all the time. And you can really feel the vibe the minute you walk through the showroom door. And I've always thought that that really starts from the corner office, if you will. Were there any fears or second thoughts that kept you up at night about selling? And how did you work through them?
Well, of course, the biggest fear is this is all I've ever done from the time I was a kid. And what am I going to do with my life? Will I have enough money? That's a big one that I still ask my partner monthly, at least. Are we going to be okay? Mm-hmm. But really, it's what am I going to do with my life? This is all I've ever done. But car people, we work. That's what we do, right? We love what we do. And that's 6 days, 7 days a week. You're on all the time. And what was my life going to be like without that? Big fear.
And 48 is so young too.
I was 49 by the time we were done, but definitely. I never in a million years imagined that I would be done that early, ever.
As you were going through the process, what did you expect to be challenging about the sale that ended up being easier than you expected, and vice versa? What was kind of harder than what you thought it would be?
Oh, wow. Nothing was really surprisingly easy. One of the frustrating parts was how long it took, and that has to do with environmental. So we had about 3.5 acres of land, and on that land, previously, there'd been 3 or 4 gas stations, and we just bought up pieces around the block as time went on. And of course, all the gas stations had been remediated, and even the dealership itself, before we bought it, we'd been in that location for 30 years. So it had been a Honda store before, and of course, things were different. And so environmental was a massive thing for us. And we wanted to make sure that we had all that clean and in place before we went looking for a buyer. And that just was frustratingly a long process.
How long did that take?
I would say 8 to 10 months.
Okay. I mean, that was smart, though, that you wanted to just address it head on yourself versus getting into a buy-sell situation and then having to try to remediate all of that during the process of the sale.
Well, it's just basic steps to a sale, car sales, right? You want to get rid of the objections right off the bat. And we knew that would be a major one. So,
yeah, absolutely.
How did you approach preparing your team or your community for the news?
Oh, that's a hard one. You want to keep the team. The new person that's buying your store is buying not just the store, but also your team, especially in our case, because they were so incredible. And so you can't say anything. And I had to sit on it for almost a year. Actually, for over a year. We did not let the team know until the last 2 weeks.
Was that part harder than you expected?
That was probably the hardest part of all, because this is like your second family, right? And they trust you. And the rumors do get flying. As hard as you try to keep it tight, rumors fly, and then you have to sit and tell your team that no, you're not selling the store, when in fact you are. And that is a little bit heart crushing at times. Yeah.
I can imagine. Knowing you the way I do, Sue, that I can believe that would be the hardest part.
Yeah, it really was.
There's got to just be so many mixed emotions going on when you're telling the team. And then also, you know, at closing, when you're signing the papers, when did it kind of finally hit you like, oh, I'm done?
I was in the store until 8 o'clock on the 30th of August, which was closing day. And I collected everything, closed off the month, and I was the last person in the store. And I locked the door, and I never used that key again. So for me, the dealer that bought it was lovely. And he'd said, you know what, Sue, you come back as much as you need to. And I'm like, I might come to see the people, but I'm not using the key ever again. That is it. I'm done.
So you can think at closing, well, I'm done now, but that isn't reality. What responsibilities, accounting and administrative items, did you have to handle after the sale?
Oh, we had at that time 5 different companies, because of course you have your real estate company. We had a company for the General Motors store. We had Hyundai. We had at some point, our accountants told us it was great to start other numbered companies. We had a family holdings company. Just, it was crazy. So, of course, you want to get those companies down to as few as possible. So, 7 years, we are 7 years out as of August 30th of this year, another month away. And we are just now down to 1 company as of this year. So, it's a lot of accounting. And it's a lot of legal and a lot of fees still to pay. The other thing is that, of course, you've got to keep those files. And we chose to keep them electronically. I just wrote Quorum a letter yesterday saying that August will be our last payment and we will no longer need access to those files. So a very exciting day yesterday.
Interesting, no doubt. What of all that administration, how much of it could have been done prior to the decision to sell?
I would say we probably could have gotten rid of one of the number companies, but we didn't know. And we actually changed accounting firms within 6 months of selling the store. We went to a larger firm that had a broader depth of knowledge of dealerships and of tax law, and they saved us a lot of money. Because, of course, in Canada, the top tax bracket out here in BC, you're paying 53%. Isn't that fun? All of my fellow Americans, unless you're in California, 53%. So they actually found a way to take it down to 25%, which is a massive savings. Massive. So find a great accountant.
Well, let's talk about life now. What's been the biggest surprise in life after the sale, either professionally or personally?
I would say for me professionally, my biggest surprise has been my new part-time job that I have that I can't explain how much it means to me and how much I enjoy it. I now work with the Automotive Business School of Canada, where I went to school. And I work with their teaching their program that is for students that are already working in the industry. Basically, if you want to be a general manager in Canada, you must attend either the course through the Automotive School in Canada or NADA in the US. And so it's a 7-module program. I was teaching 2 of them, new and used sales and dealership management. And I will now also be looking after the capstone program, which is the business plan that's due at the end of all of your courses. And to be able to share the love and the knowledge that you have with people in an industry that you still love, and to be able to still be in the business, but not in it. Honestly, it's the highlight of my career. It beats us. Our dealership was the number one dealership. We won the President's Award of Merit top rank in 2016, and it actually beats that, if you can believe it.
Well, I can certainly see your passion and love for the industry. Was it just like, I guess, operating the dealership on a day-to-day basis? Was it just that was just too stressful, or was too much, or the hours just were, you know, work-life balance? Or I guess, what was it when you were coming home at the end of the day and you're like, oh, this is just maybe not what I want to do anymore?
I wasn't very good at work-life balance. In fact, it cost me a marriage because of it. And I just knew it was time to not be so involved anymore. And yeah. And again, I have the support of an amazing partner. He's incredible and he does still work. So I have that to fall back on as well.
Is there a small thing you get to enjoy now that used to always fall to the bottom of the list?
Yes, golf. I'm a little bit golf obsessed at the moment. I've had some just amazing opportunities, things I said I would never do again. Well, I never had my own kids because I was always at work. So things I never said I would do. I never thought I would be a grandma, and now I have a grandson. He's 16 months, and I love spending time with him. Never thought I'd get good enough. I got a hole in one last year. I never thought I'd get married because I thought I'd be working all the time. I got engaged. So never say never, because you have no idea what's coming down the pipe for you.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you have a whole other next phase of your life with so many just great accomplishments.
Thank you.
How has selling changed your view on leadership and legacy, or what it means to build something lasting, especially now that you're in this role where you're kind of educating and mentoring other people in the business?
Love what you do and share that and give the love in the business to the other people. There are some incredible automotive people up and coming in across Canada, because I get to teach all the way from Vancouver to Halifax, and amazing energy, amazing automotive minds. I think the biggest thing that I learned and that I didn't do now looking back is I didn't spend enough time working on my business. I spent too much time working in it. And I think that if I had spent more time working on it, I may still be there. I was taught to just work as a kid. I think a lot of young dealer kids, they go one of two ways. They either don't work at all, or they're working to try and prove themselves. And I was one of those get there, stay there late, be there all the time. I went 8 years once without a vacation. Surprising I got divorced, isn't it?
Wow, 8 years without a vacation.
stupid, right? But nobody ever said, you don't need to do this. Nobody ever told me that. And so if you're out there and you're working in your store, get your team built up, build another you. And I wished somebody had said, you need to build another you. You need to create somebody that you can trust when you're gone. And again, I had a team I could trust. I just couldn't let it go. And for me, that's been such a treasure to be able to let that go and move on.
Sue, thanks for such sincere reflection and sharing that with us and the audience. What are you most grateful for about the timing of your decision?
Didn't have to work through COVID. I know that it was an incredibly profitable time, but to not have to deal with all of that, I was teaching online at the time, and to hear the stories of what was happening in the like Mercedes in downtown Toronto, where they had to close the store because the wash person had COVID, and then they had to ozonate and do all this sort of thing and be closed for 3 and 4 days at a time. And I felt very fortunate to not have to go through that. And yeah, we definitely could have been very profitable coming out the other end, as we know that everybody, that's probably the most profitable time they've ever had in the history of their stores. All of a sudden, I called it car dealing for dummies, right? You just came in and you said, yeah, this is what I want. Okay, well, if you don't want it, somebody else will buy it.
Just took orders.
Yeah.
What's one myth about selling a dealership that you wish you could bust for others thinking about it?
Your life isn't over. It's not the end. You do have to think about, I was talking to my partner the other night about the podcast and what we were talking about. He's a financial advisor. So he sees people go through this process all the time. And he said, if you don't sit down and think about what your life's going to be like when you're over, that's when he sees the problems. That you don't have a hobby, you don't have somewhere that you like to go, things that you like to do other than work. And so find something else, and it may still be in the industry. There's a lot of opportunities out there for people with knowledge and skill that doesn't have to be, you know, 24/7 anymore. You don't have to wake up to bad emails at 6 o'clock in the morning to start your day. So yeah, life isn't over. I think it's starting over again, and it's very exciting. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I love the way you said that. Great perspective.
Sue, if you could go back and talk to yourself 1 year before the sale, what would you say?
It's going to be okay, and it's going to be better than you could have imagined.
So Sue, what advice would you give to other dealers who are on the fence about selling?
I think money obviously is a big thing. Most of us that are successful in business are motivated by money. Yes, it's true. And it's okay to say it. I'm constantly telling people, profit is not a bad word. Anyway, it's hard to all of a sudden not have a steady paycheck. And I think when you're working all the time, you might go out and buy, you know, a major purchase or do something, go on a big trip or whatever, but you think it'll be okay because I can still earn more money. And you will never earn as much money as you do when you own your store. So be prepared for that, and be prepared not to have a paycheck every month, unless, of course, you've chosen to lease your store out to the next owner, et cetera. We decided to just sell everything, which in my mind, looking back, has been a great decision, because a dealership is a very unique space. And the people that we sold the store to, they built a new building and went to a much smaller space and a smaller building. They had a very different business model to what we had. And so I recommend getting rid of it all, really. Just get rid of the gorilla on your back. It's gone. We're moving on. But as I tell people that we're always looking to go down from 2 cars to 1 car, I would always say park that car for a month and don't drive it before you trade in 2 cars for 1. Then you can come in and I'll let you buy just 1 car instead of 2. And so I would highly recommend, if you can, go for a year and just live off of your savings and get used to not getting a paycheck every month. And if you're comfortable with that, fantastic. Go for it. But yeah, the money, I think, is a massive thing that people don't think about. And it's really important.
I have a dealer client as well who also chose to spend 6 months away from the store down in Florida just to make sure he was going to be okay not being in the store day to day. So I feel like that goes kind of hand in hand as well.
That's so smart. That he's a wise man, obviously. So, or woman. It'd be a woman.
Well, it was a man, and he came back and he's like, Jamie, I was okay. And I'm like, great.
Yeah, that's a great advice. Go rent a place somewhere down south and try it on for size, for sure.
I appreciate you bringing up the money aspect of it, Sue. I know people, even personal friends, like, you're so busy. We're so busy accumulating money or accumulating wealth and turning that accumulation into now you're drawing it down. It's a real paradigm shift for most adults. And yeah, I think having your partner in that industry was probably a benefit. And if someone doesn't necessarily have a person they know, like, and trust to guide them through that shift, that I think that would be a good step, is to go and find that individual.
Yeah. And somebody that you'd feel comfortable talking to. A good financial advisor doesn't just do money. They are like a counselor for people. They get to know you. They get to know what you need. And they'll be able to tell you whether you can go or not. Just know, you know, again, we see a lot of people that they go and they forget that they're not still accumulating. So my tips, great accountant or great accounting firm, good lawyers, because you can never go wrong there, and a great financial advisor and family support. Those are the four big things that'll make the change a success.
One of the reasons I thought Sue would be fantastic for this podcast is my wife and I were fortunate enough to have dinner with Sue and her partner about this time last year in her hometown. And at the end of that dinner, Sue was so enthusiastic about the life that she had now. And one of her parting comments was an offer to take a phone call from any dealer that was on the fence. So that's kind of how this podcast episode came to be. I thought, rather than just take a couple of phone calls, why don't we tell everybody?
That's great. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, life just begins again.
Well, we can certainly see that for you. And that's such a generous offer as well. And I mean, what I'm getting out of this conversation with you, Sue, is just how authentic you are. And I just appreciate you being just so true to your story and sharing it with everyone. And I think we can all learn a lot from it.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for being here.
Really great to chat with you like this, Sue, and hear more of your story. I knew a lot of it, but not all of it. So it was really good for me as well.
Well, Sue, as we wrap up here, if any dealer, anybody in our audience wanted to reach out to you, what would be the best way for them to do so?
They can find me on LinkedIn and just look for Sue Finneron. Not Super Sue, just Sue Finneron.
Excellent, Sue. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Driving Performance. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review. If you're considering buying or selling an automotive dealership, reach out to us at performancebrokerageservices.com or send an email to info@performancebrokerageservices.com.